Extra Points is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. You must be 21 or older.
Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his good, good pals, Dave Damaschek and Martin Weiss.
All right, welcome to the Extra Points Podcast, part of the Extra Points Podcast Network. Cousin Sal coming to you on a Thursday morning. Yeah, Mikey Meatballs, Eddie Spaghetti fiddling with the knobs. Babyface Joel Solomon is producing this mess. And joining me as always, my dear, dear pal, Martin Weiss. My other dear pal, Dave Damaschek, is not here. He is, I think he's in a van selling Picket for President t-shirts. I don't know, driving cross country. He will be
sponsored
back.
Sponsored by Acushur.
Yeah, sponsored by Acushur, of course. He has to make out on the big big sponsorship name. But happy December to you, Martin. I saw December 1st, and I freaked out a little bit. That means a monster Amex bill is coming my way in 30 days. And it also means it's time to make money. So we're going to
I mean, pretty much the same reaction here. Black Friday to Cyber Monday is me bugging everybody in there in my life. What do you want for Christmas? Because I try to shut Christmas down around December 15th, but somehow I still stay spending until December 31st. Like, it doesn't seem to end until at least New Year's Eve. This is the tough time of the year, especially financially. But luckily, I'll be working every holiday, so I'll get a little bonus pay.
Yeah, but we're going to give out money. We're going to make some money tonight on the Buffalo-New England game. That's going to be fun. I think we're on the same side. I listened to Lemon Pepper Parlay with you and Will Blackman. We have Jeff Schwartz coming up at the bottom of the hour. You can't read. I mean, you know, I say bottom of the hour, but if you started listening to this podcast at 4:15 in the afternoon, it's not really bottom of the hour. So I can't be cool like that, Martin, and say bottom of the hour. But he will be here. Jeff Schwartz, former Oregon Duck, former New York Giant. Eddie Spaghetti will talk about the Giants and the Washington Commanders. We're going to talk with Jeff also about USC, Utah, big conference championship weekend coming up. I do want to point people to extrapoints.com/arcade. We have our pick'em contest. We have our prop quiz contest, $100, gold cap up for grabs. November prop culture is settled. The winner is Jordan Anderson. He got 7 right. Good job by you. He will be sent a gold cap, and we're going to have December prop culture up tomorrow. All right, Martin, let's do it. Buffalo, New England tonight. Buffalo -3.5. It's in Foxborough. It was 5.5. Now 3.5. Really tight. The total went down a point also to 43.5. I love this game for New England. I really do. Too much. I know they're the inferior team ultimately, but I think they've had this game circled on their calendar for a while. It's a bit of a revenge. 47-17 they lost. Remember back in January? They play him the last game of the year. May or may not mean anything for Buffalo. Probably will. But they need this one. You can't lose 2 to New England. I'm sorry, you can't lose 2 to Buffalo. And then you have 7 losses. You're in trouble. I don't think the old man lets it happen. I like the Bills to lose 21-19. What do you say?
Yeah, I this was bordering. I was thinking about making it my pup of the week if it wasn't Thursday night. I love the Patriots in this spot. If, like, from everything that you just said is true, but then also just looking at the humanity aspect from Buffalo, having to travel from Buffalo to Detroit, back to Buffalo, back to Detroit in the middle of the holidays. Now they're going back to New England. They've really been on the road the last 4 weeks, even though they're supposed to be at home. I really kind of feel like it's a schedule loss for the Bills, and they've been flirting with it the last 3 games and they're 2-1 since Allen hurt his UCL. And I like the way that Mac Jones looked on Thanksgiving. I don't know if he's going to be the long-term answer in New England. It doesn't seem like New England knows if he's going to be the long-term answer either. But, I mean, I think he's shown that he's got some ability and ability to move the ball. But really, I think this comes down to the Patriots defense. If they're able to do whatever they didn't do against Minnesota, but if Patriots defense can stop and kind of hold down Diggs and get to Allen a few times, which between Uche and Judon, I don't see a problem. They both get to the quarterback a ton. I like New England. Yeah. I love New England in this spot.
Yeah, like you said, their defense took a week off against Minnesota. Number 2 still overall DVOA defensive scoring right there. And Belichick, you know, both teams had a week off. This is one of those rare Thursday games where one or even both, if not one, have a full week's rest. So I think he'll have them prepared. Bills, like you said, been slipping a little bit. 1-3 against the spread in the last 4, at least against the spread, right? They haven't looked good. Pats 7-3 against the number in their last 10 at home. Yeah, I'm with you with Mac Jones. I don't think he's going to spray the ball all over the field, but it is a very weird game. Spaghetti, what was it when they played on that Monday night game? There were like five passes total. That was last year, right?
Seven,
that was a weird game.
With the bad wind and the really cold game. Yeah, there was no passes. It was single digit passes. Yeah.
It's hard to handicap this between the 47-17 in January and the game where nobody passed. But I think Belichick will have some kind of plan. Bills, again, not great without Von Miller. It's funny. I have them on all sorts of futures. I need them to get going at some point. But I don't think tonight's the night. All right, Martin and I.
This is the one thing that concerns me on this, though. When's the last time we saw New England in prime time? Well, obviously not Thanksgiving. The last time we saw New England in prime time against a running quarterback, people had Justin Fields ready to supplant him and Lamar Jackson as the most athletic quarterback in the league. So that gives me cause for concern here, because if Josh Allen just decides to, tuck it and run, that could be an issue. But still, I'm still with the Patriots.
Yeah, and that Monday night game is interesting because they kind of turned it around. Now, I know they had two wins against the Jets, who are a playoff team, so you can't even say that anymore. But right now they're a playoff team. But had they not lost that Vikings game, which, came down to one play, they would have been going for five in a row here, the Patriots. So I think they're a little better than people are giving them credit for. And I think this is a must win. Take the 3.5. Martin and I agree. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Your first bet with Caesars Sportsbook and Casino. It's on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code CZRFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet. That first bet also gives you 1,000 tier credits and 1,000 reward credits, putting you closer to the types of perks only Caesars can offer: free stays, game tickets, experiences, and more.
You must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ontario, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Ohio, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Yes, you have to know when to stop before you start. If you have a gambling problem in Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or if you know someone who has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in Maryland, visit MarylandGamblingMDGamblingHelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. Visit CONNEXontario.ca or call 1-866-531-2600 or text CONNEX to 247-247. Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, Martin, let's do this. Philadelphia, Tennessee. This is another one, another underdog. I love nice, solid chunk of points for Vrabel's Titans. Pretty gritty team. Philly -5. They're home. I know Tennessee lost to the Bengals last week at home, but I really like them in this spot. The calendar turns to December. We were bemoaning it. But all of a sudden, I don't know, people say it and it sounds stupid, but it's all of a sudden very difficult to tackle Derrick Henry. You can make him fumble in the end zone in November, but you can't tackle him in December. And I love this defense. Titans, third in rushing yards per game, 84.5. They're 5-0 against the number in the last five road games. I just like Vrabel on the spot. He and Tannehill, 11-5-1 against the spread and straight up after a loss as a duo. I say Titans pull off the upset 23-17.
Yeah, I love the Titans here too. If nothing else, like from everything obviously you just said, I agree with. On the Philly side of it, they don't distribute their points evenly. They don't score in the second half quite often, except for that game against Indianapolis where they had to score in the second half. But again, that's a game against Indianapolis who has, you know, a commentator for a head coach. So, you know, Philly has been great this season, but their inability to really defend the run, I think, rears its ugly head here. Derrick Henry has not had his yards per carry. I think the last three games has been under 3.5. I think we see over that this game. Like you said, in December, he just gets that much harder to tackle. Every year around this time, we see one of those 85-yard runs that he just takes off a kickoff. You know, they come out, offense first and 10, hand it to him, and he's gone. Right. And without, you know, Jordan Davis being nicked up, yeah, I like Tennessee here, especially when you have two offenses that are going to be depending on running the ball.
We went over this, Martin, on against all odds. Josh Jacobs plus 175. We went over some of the tighter odds for the position players. Josh Jacobs, most rushing yards, plus 175. Derrick Henry, plus 260. Nick Chubb, plus 300. Is it as simple as you can't tackle Derrick Henry in the winter? I don't know. Nick Chubb maybe going to get the ball less with Deshaun Watson at quarterback while he figures stuff out. And Josh Jacobs, all right, he made enough of a play for his contract year. You can maybe see him sitting a game or two. Or do you like Chubb or Jacobs in this?
I would have to go with Jacobs. I'd go Jacobs first, then Henry. So I pretty much in order of the odds. But I wouldn't pick Chubb. You inserting Deshaun Watson into this offense, like, it's not going to be turn around and hand the ball off 35 times a game like it was with Jacoby Brissett. It's just not. That's, you didn't trade all those picks and make him pay all that guaranteed money for him specifically with all the things going on with him, for him not to throw the ball. So I don't know about that.
I have Jacobs at 6-1. I think I bet it like a month ago. I think he was 30-1. I think we said preseason to lead the league in rushing yards. He has a free game over everybody. He's like 111 yards ahead of Derrick Henry. So I'll stick with Jacobs, but it does get interesting down the stretch. All right, let's take a look next game. So yeah, I'm saying 23-17. Titans pull off that win.
I like that.
Over Philly. Mini Soda and the Jets, a 3-point favorite. Oh, man. Martin, it seems like every week there's a minus -3, and you look at it and you say, oh, it's too low. They're trying to trap you. And then you stay away, and you want to vomit when that team wins by 20 hours later, right? I think this is the one. I'm down on the Jets more than a lot of people. I get it. Their defense is very solid. I'm not buying this Mike White thing. I mean, let's remember, last year he crushed the Bengals, right? Who went to the Super Bowl. And then the following week, he had 95 yards passing against the Colts. And then the following week, he had 4 interceptions against the Bills. And that was the last we heard of him until Zach Wilson said something stupid in a press conference. And now he's the starting quarterback. He looked good. I don't think he'll look good against the Darius Smith, the 61 pressures, and this Vikings defense. I'm saying 27-17. And I don't even love the Vikings, but they do go over their win total 9.5 with a victory over the Jets, 27-17. What do you say?
Yeah, this is where we split. Zach Wilson has been the worst quarterback in the NFL, and that's including backups. So he's playing for the Jets. I think the idea that you just have a live body playing quarterback instead of Zach Wilson just helps that much more. And this Jets team loves Mike White, and I get it that he's not going to be the guy, but I think the bridge is going to be extended just a little while longer. I can't say they win this game, but I think they're live in it the entire time. Especially, I got to think Sauce Gardner is going to have something for Justin Jefferson. And if Justin Jefferson is somehow, I mean, just think about when the Vikings were, you know, they came out, Justin Jefferson's killing the Packers. Aaron Rodgers said he's the best receiver in the league. And he has a couple down games, so to speak, and the Vikings offense, I mean, they won, but the Vikings offense was not necessarily the reason. With this Jets team, I'm gonna ride with Mike White at least one more week. I'm taking Mike White in the points, but I do think that Minnesota probably wins. So I'm calling it close.
6-1 straight up in the last 7 home games. Jefferson, Sauce Gardner is a fun matchup. I mean, they should have an alternate broadcast just for that, right? He's broken up 14 passes this year, but you know there's going to be one or two 50-50 balls he probably won't get to. But I think you're right. You know, Mac Jones had a career resurgence against this Viking squad. So maybe Mike White could. I think they're just going to dump him a lot. I think he's going to get sacked. This Vikings pass rush, I think, is a little more underrated. I stay in with 27-17 and the Vikings. Game of the week. Well, I don't even know if we can call this a game of the week because San Francisco, Miami is pretty great too. But Kansas City -2 at Cincinnati. Has that changed? I think it's about the same. I'm going to be all over Mahomes here. You know, this is talk about games that are circled on the calendar, and it's pretty easy for Kansas City the rest of the way. They weathered the storm. They had a very, very tough schedule to start, and now they're at Cincinnati, who seems to be coming into their own. But let's face it, they were up 21-7 in the regular season game last year. They blew that. They blew the AFC championship, which we all know, some nonsense before halftime. They couldn't even score. But Mahomes, this whole weird thing with that, he doesn't lose in November and December. It's a real... You have to start considering this to be like you can't just ignore that he's won 26 straight games in November and December as a favorite or of 3 or less or as an underdog. He's 17-5-1. I like this game way over, and I like it 36-28 for Kansas City.
You know, we really are getting, and I know this is not a unique take, but to the LeBronization of Mahomes, but it's just we're in year 2 or 3 of that. Like, we're in year 20 of LeBron now in the NBA. But imagine, well, you could have done it. I was, like, in the 8th grade. But if you could have bet on LeBron every year to win, you know what I'm saying, to go over and do all of this, and it's like, obviously, he's going to continue to do so. That's where we are with Mahomes right now. Take it to the bank. So, like, the idea that, like, blind bet Kansas City anything less than 3, I love the Bengals. I absolutely love the Bengals. Amarunson or whatever his name is, the defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. He's got those guys who you can't name 4 Bengals defensive starters, but they shut people down. South of San Francisco, to me, they're the most one of the more impressive defensive units out there. I don't care. Patrick Mahomes is the best player in football. He should be this year's MVP. He gets this win, but in turn, I think it'll be close. I think it should be close. But again, like you said, the Chiefs should be super motivated for this. I do think the Bengals are going to go on a run and be a player in the AFC. So this is a whole bunch of me talking about like how I have no idea how this game's going to go. But if that's the case, I'm going to take the best player, and that's Mahomes.
All right. The best player has the 5th best defense against the run too. Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs. So that's against Sammy Perine and, banged up by Joe Mixon if he comes back from the concussion. So,
I think he practiced yesterday, so I think I saw reports he was trying to get out there today. So I think we'll see Mixon play.
Yep. This is an Andy Reid special. I love it. I love this game. Those late afternoon games are solid. The second one is San Francisco -4 over Miami. This 49ers defense is not allowed a point in the last 4 second halves combined. I mean, it's basically a soccer game when they get involved. They don't give up anything. Jimmy G, I'm looking at these numbers. When he plays West in the Pacific time zone, 15-3, 12-5-1 against the spread. I think there's too much of an advantage here for Shanahan. He's going against the protege, McDaniel, on the other side. Doesn't want to get embarrassed. He gave them all their running backs, Salvin, Ahmed and Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson all play for the Dolphins. Back to Jimmy G. Somehow, 49ers, top 10 passing offense. I like them, 26-14.
Yeah, I like the Niners here as well. This is another one that I feel like is a super toss-up, but it's just more like, teacher versus student. Mike McDaniel, I mean, who knows? We've seen Shanahan dominate Sean McVay, and that was his assistant. Mike McDaniel was his assistant before he went over there to Miami. So I think we'll probably see something similar there. Like, I think the Shanahan, like, that's going to be my thing. And then Miami, also, their defense against the run. Like, you look at some of these numbers that of course, Miami's offense is, like, you know, greatest show on turf type thing. But their defense gives up a lot of yards, it feels like. And I think San Francisco will be able to run the ball on them, even though they have some running back injuries. They're going to be committed to running the ball. So I like San Francisco to win. And I'm going to take them to cover, but I do think it'll be a closer game. But I think like San Francisco by five.
All right. Dolphins are 0-3-1 against the spread last four road games versus a team with a winning home record. And that's the 49ers, who have just lit this division on fire. I mean, they're up a game and a half now on Seattle. Like, there's only two divisions, we talked about it earlier in the week, that are really up for grabs odds wise. And that's the AFC North and the AFC East. All right. Spaghetti, I want to talk about the Giants Commanders, because it is disrespectful that the Giants are getting a point and a half at home. I'm going with your Giants here. The Commanders aren't world beaters, right? It's like you look at them and every game's kind of the same. They could have lost last week. Just some turnover at the goal line there. Otherwise, you know, why shouldn't the Giants, who are getting players back, win this game? It's must win for the Giants here, right?
Exactly. You said it, Sal. They're getting a bunch of players back. In fact, they are getting back, I think, somewhere between 8 and 9 players, or at least they are limited or full participation in practice, 8 or 9 players who take significant snaps for the Giants. So that's pretty good. Not that this matters, is more of like a Harry stat, a historical fact, but Daniel Jones 4-1 versus the Commanders, or the Washington football franchise, in his career. So he clearly could beat that team. I think they have not had their bye yet, the Commanders. They're heading to the bye after this game. So if you want to pick the Commanders to split with the Giants, your money's probably better spent on the game after their bye, when they are home, versus the game coming up in MetLife. So I do like the Giants at home. You know, they showed some life versus the Cowboys in the first half. I know the Commanders have kind of gone on this little bit of a hot run here, this little streak, but their victories really outside of the Eagles win, they're beating a bunch of poor teams. So I'm not too enthralled with, you know, Taylor Heineke. I think Giants take care of business, win this game. It'll be a close one because the Giants are still missing a lot of key players, but I think they'll take care of business and win this game.
I think another bet out there that I would jump on is Barkley, comeback player of the year. We haven't discussed this one in a while. 2-1 odds. Geno Smith became the favorite while no one was paying attention at -300. I think Seattle goes away a little bit. I think the Giants hang on to that playoff spot, and thus I'm giving Barkley, who I think is going to have a big game this weekend, at +200 for comeback player of the year. Martin, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, everything that y'all said vibes, but the other thing, Taylor Heineke, like if the back judge doesn't, or the umpire rather, doesn't get in the way, this interception against Minnesota, and they lose that, like in that game's a blowout, like it. There's a lot of different things that are, and I hate to like be like
that stupid Eagles play, the way that Eagles thing, the way that ended.
Yeah, it's just celebrating. It's too much luck with this guy. Like, you know, and I get it. He's got moxie, and you know, me and Will Blackman were talking about, like, you know, if you don't have quarterback face, you got to have it, right? And he's got it. Like, people want to run through walls with this guy, but that doesn't mean I'm going to bet on him. All right, like I just can't. The Giants are the better team. They've been the better team all year. And also, too, to me, the Giants have found a way to win games that doesn't put their players – that puts their players in the best position to succeed. If you want Daniel Jones dropping back, throwing the ball 40 times a game, good luck, champ. You know what I'm saying? Like that, and that's what it feels like the Washington football team is doing with Heineke. Like they should be running the ball better than they are, and they don't with Robinson and Gibson. And I just, I'm taking the Giants. I'm taking Daboll. The Giants, they need to be in the playoffs. Get this team out of here.
You know, whatever. They took the Eagles by surprise, right? I don't think the Commanders are taking anyone by surprise, and now playing in a hostile environment, those two combined. And I'm not even, I don't think they're the better team, really. And so I'm not sure why they're favored here. I would take the Giants for sure. I think Spaghetti's right. Take, if you like Washington, take them after the bye. I think they play in 3 weeks against the Giants in the rematch. Hey, I'm looking here on Caesars. It has lowest scoring team. We've not done this. Lowest scoring team, Martin. Is it smart to just take the Broncos at 5-1 and close your eyes? I mean, just take the Broncos every week at 5-1, right? And you're going to win in the next 3 weeks before December.
I think you would have at least hit at least, you know, what are we, week 12? You would at least hit 5 of them things. 5-1, that's worth it.
Broncos 5-1, Rams 7-1. They're home against Seattle. The Colts +750. They're at Dallas. Your Saints 8-1 at Tampa Bay. I wouldn't like that. Giants 12-1. Texans 15-1. Worst record. They'll probably end up with the worst record, but home against Cleveland. Spaghetti, you like any of these? I'm just going Denver. I think Baltimore. I don't even know that it's a blowout. It could be like 16-6 or something.
I'd love to be cynical and pick the Giants, but I will go with the Broncos. We talked about the -3 yesterday with Hench and Sheck. I mean, the lowest scoring offense since the 2000 Cleveland Browns. They're scoring like a shade over 14 points a game. Right. Obviously, you saw the defensive lineman screaming at Russell Wilson, and then the news came out yesterday that he had a birthday party thrown by Sierra, and less than half the team attended on their off day. So I think not only is he playing poorly and there's no connection with Hackett, but there's clearly a divide in the locker room too. So I think that that does mean a very, very low scoring offense.
Don't you feel like, Martin, if like the rest of us would be like, oh my God, nobody showed up to the birthday, but Russell Wilson's like, oh my God, 27 guys showed up to my birthday party. I feel like he's in a world of his own, and he wouldn't even take the hint.
Yeah. I mean, either way, that's what that's the energy he would have. He's not going to be like Junior at the funeral in The Sopranos. He's like, nobody's here. It's like,
right.
Like, well, Tony's like, I'm here. Hang on a second. Yeah. You know, Carmelo, I'm here. And first of all, shout out to Meatballs and Spaghetti for coming to my birthday party.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Oh, yeah. You were the perfect person to ask.
We also went to Russell Wilson's.
You were there. That's what I was going to say. I was at Russell's, but not Martin's.
Can I interest you in the Colts being the lowest scoring team this week?
I'm looking at some of these others. I would think that, but they might just be so out of it that they score a couple of points in the fourth quarter against us. But yeah,
I have this vision of the Cowboys getting up 14 points in the first quarter, mm-hmm. and now Matt Ryan's got to throw the ball, and Michael Parsons is just hunting.
Yeah.
Down after down after down after down and Armstrong. And I just see, like, if the Cowboys get a lead, this thing's over early. And the only thing we're worried about is the 11, right?
I might take a few of these. I don't know why I'm in love with this now, but now that we've seen enough of all these bad teams, Broncos, Colts, and then maybe one long shot. I don't know. I might take the Commanders. Why not? Why do they have to score 25 points in MetLife? 20, and you get 25-1. Pretty good. All right, check it all out on Caesars. Hey, we got our guy coming up, Jeff Schwartz. We'll take one more break, and we'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, let's bring in our guest. He's a friend of the show, possibly the best friend of the show. We might have to make ankle bracelets. Before his career in the NFL, he started 3 years at the University of Oregon, but more importantly, holds the Pac-10 record for rushing by a right tackle at 3 yards.
Yay.
Nice job. And
it's my greatest accomplishment of all my sports playing career.
He is the only former offensive lineman named Jeff in sports media without a head coaching job in the NFL. I looked it up. Host of Pac-12 Today and Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You podcast. Our good pal, Jeff Schwartz. What's happening, Jeff?
Look, Trent Dilfer just got a job, man. Where's my job at? I need a petition like Oregon or the Giants or the Panthers. No, Panthers. I live in Charlotte. Panthers. Hit me up, man. I'll be your coach.
I know you're saying that as a joke, but as the Jeff Saturdays and the sports media members get hired, you must be like, I could do this, right? I should get a call at least.
No? I would be a good offensive line coach, but I don't want to do the hours. Like a head coach, I don't know. I think I'd be too laid back to be a head coach. I could use my timeouts, though. I feel like I'd be a good game manager. Like I'd be able to call timeout and get where we're supposed to go. But look, Jeff Saturday, he was working with the Colts for 2 years, right? Like this wasn't like out of the blue sort of.
Yeah.
And there's a report today that they want Jim Harbaugh. They're trying to get Jim Harbaugh to be their head coach.
Really? So you need to become friendlier with the owners of several teams or the head coaches or whatever, right? So this is on you, I think, at this
point. It's totally my fault. If I was a better schmoozer and better a marketer of my own talents, I'd be a head coach somewhere.
There you go. We talked about it and Martin talked about it on Lemon Pepper Parlay, and you discussed those timeouts. You alluded to them. It is true. Like, it does seem like the entire ESPN crew is making excuses for Saturday and saying, well, it could have been Matt Ryan calling a timeout.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I guess it could have, you know, but something should have slowed it. Something should have happened. I kind of blame both, but also you could say in the press conference, like, yeah, we maybe should have used one there, right? He did. I thought he said we had all the time we needed.
On Monday, he admitted. But here's, guys, the people are not talking about the play that they should have called a timeout on. The play before Matt Ryan got sacked, that's when you call a timeout.
Yeah.
You wasted 40 seconds in that. I understand Matt Ryan has a long run, and you kind of in that moment, you're like, let's go for it. Like, I get that. Everyone's sort of in that spot. But when Matt Ryan gets sacked, everyone has to run back to the line of scrimmage, get set up to run a play. That's when your timeout should have been called. I'm fine with them really not using the timeout on the second down scramble. It's the first down play that no one's talked about that cost him nearly 40 seconds by not calling a timeout after he was stripped.
Right.
Would you have in that moment, ever, or any point in your career, call timeout on the field, knowing that, like, we need to call timeout. We have three timeouts. Why? And it's because it's the head coach's job, or it's just overstepping,
it's above my pay grade, buddy.
Yeah.
And for a long period of time, too, like, players couldn't call timeout. It was mostly on the coach to call timeout. I'm actually not sure if that rule still applies. I think quarterbacks can call timeout, obviously. And then, like, coaches, it used to only be head coaches only as well. So, like, this is not my job. Like, my job is not to worry about the clock. So I would never get up in any situation. I might signal, like, if I know we need a timeout. And
what are we doing here? Yeah.
If everyone's doing the same time, but I'm not going to be like, hey, referee, I'm the only person calling timeout. I don't work like that.
Yeah, but you know what? It's also just it's an involuntary reflex to do the timeout signal, right? Like, it might go in your head. And even as a lineman, you're like, okay, this is above my pay grade. Coach is going to be pissed if I do this. But, oh, my God, naturally made the tee with my hands, and now the ref saw it. So, really, there's a fine line there, isn't there?
I think it's, like, the bottom of my mind. Like, I'm trying to block the guy in front of me. I gotta
catch your breath.
Yeah. There's other people that are worried about the clock than me. Like, that's not my job. Yeah. So, I don't think I've ever really got up and signaled timeout at any point in my career. I leave that up to the coaching staff or the quarterback.
All right. Now I want to get into some of these championships, Pac-12 championship, yes. Big 12 championship, but let's go over your Chiefs. I mean, I'm calling them your Chiefs. You back every week. And mostly because you have to defend them to Damashek, who for whatever reason picks them to come in last every year. It's really silly at this point. It's why we kicked them off the podcast today. We can't have me. But anyway, I think this is a very important game for them. One that they've circled on the calendar. They blew that regular season game that they were up 21-7 to the Bengals. Obviously that AFC championship was a debacle. I really love Mahomes and Reed in this situation. And I'm thinking, talk me out of putting a lot of money on the Chiefs minus a couple.
Yeah. So this is the game I think they circled in the offseason as the game they wanted to be most prepared to play. And that doesn't mean they're going to win the game because the Bengals are playing good football now. But if we're going to assume that this is the game that Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes said, we're going to be ready to play this season more than any other game, you're going to get the best game plan from them, right? You're going to get the best understanding of what they have to do to win this game. And you're right. The first game, there were some things went against their way. They blew a lead. And the second game was, in fact, I think the best way to describe it is if you had said that they were trying to throw the game, that would make more sense. And then losing the game, right? Like, it made no sense for that to happen. And again, give the Bengals credit. Defensively, they made some adjustments in the second half of that game. And so to me, if you're looking at this game saying, look, this is everything the Chiefs have, we will see in this game. And that is obviously a reason to back Pat Mahomes here. But it's also a big game, I think, just for kind of seedings in the AFC, right? Because if the Dolphins go and lose to the Niners, if the Bills lose tonight, then you get another game up on your opponents for that one seed in the AFC. So it's a big game, even for the Bengals. If they lose this game and the Ravens can do their job against the Broncos, now the Ravens get another game on the Bengals as well. So as we look toward kind of where the seeding is at in the conference, this is important. And lastly, look, the psyche of both teams, right? The Bengals win this game, they're going to the playoffs thinking, we're going to beat the Chiefs again, right? Like there is a little bit of confidence that plays a role in this game as well. But I think Mahomes is a under 3-point favorite. It's like 17-5 against the spread in his career. Number like that. Because most often they don't lose these games. They're most excited to play. They're not excited to play the Rams as a 16-point favorite. That's not what the Chiefs do well. It's these type of games they play well. And I said the same thing last year. They lost both games. So I'm saying the same thing again, but I'm going to continue to go back to the same thought I had, is the Chiefs are going to get their best performance of the year.
The thing that gets me about this Kansas City offense, it's like, obviously Tyreek Hill is one of the best deep threats in the history of the league. He goes, right? And the offense is just,
Hold on. He's gone. Yeah. I'm changing my pick.
That number 10 over there is Pacheco. Now
this happened this morning. Oh, all right. Go ahead. No,
but so like Kansas City's offense, and it seems to be that Travis Kelce was more of the engine that made the car go than Tyreek. As you see, Kelce is still, obviously keeping things going. Do the Bengals have a way to match up with Kelce and kind of eliminate him, or is it more along the lines of what we've seen all season?
Yeah, I have always contended that Kelce was the reason this team kind of got going. And I'm glad I've been validated by that without Tyreek Hill being this lineup. And you can certainly try to slow him down. And there have been times in his career that teams are able to do that. You find ways to double him. You hit him off the line of scrimmage with a defensive end. And again, you just put two eyes on him, right? Because if you single him up, you're not going to cover him very often. But what Mahomes has done best this season, better than any part of his career, is he's spreading the wealth around, right? I mean, he'll have games where he has, 20 completions to 9 different receivers. So if Kelce's not open, Kelce's got to have a big game, I think, for them to win this. But you look at Juju's back, and MVS is playing now. Kadarius Toney won't play. Hardman's not going to play. Sky Moore had more of a role last weekend as well. They've incorporated other tight ends into the offense, the running back. So if Kelce's taken away, which is a loss for the team if he can't, be himself, I still believe they can win this game with the other weapons they have. I look at the first game, the playoff game. Kelce had 10 receptions in the playoff game, I think it was. I mean, I don't know if the Bengals, again, it's hard to do that. And what Andy Reid does so well is he finds matchups, right? He puts Kelce on the move a lot. If you watch motions a lot of times, so you can't double him. They move him in different places, so you can't get a beat on where he's going to be. And then what makes it even tougher is that Kelce just does what he wants sometimes. Like him and Mahomes have this relationship where give him a two-way go and he goes one direction and Mahomes finds him.
Yeah, and also I'm not taking anything away from Kelce, but just with Mahomes' style of play, right? So it's not like a regular quarterback looking through 1, 2, 3 progressions. It's like, oh boy, now we're through the third progression a third time, a fourth time. So the big guy in the middle of the field is likely to get open in a case like that, right? When the quarterback's running around for 15 seconds.
And I think also too, when Mahomes scrambles, he still doesn't have that wide receiver he trusts, where it was used to be Tyreek Hill. It is Kelce. Mm-hmm. Like he when he scrambles, he's looking for Kelce first. Right. And the one thing I do wonder about this game too is in the second half of the playoff game, the Bengals just said, "Look, we're not going to let you pass the ball. We're going to drop 8 into coverage, and we're going to dare you to run the ball." Does Andy Reid run the football? Like, does he decide, "Hey, I'm going to kind of break from what I have done in my career, and if someone gives me the run, I'm going to take the run"? Because if they do, and the Bengals can stop the run, we saw last weekend against Tennessee, but if they're gearing up to stop the pass in this game, there might be opportunities for the Chiefs to run the ball, which they should have done in the second half of that game anyways, and use that as their offense.
Another reason they may want to empty the tank for this game is it's kind of easy the rest of the way, right? I don't want to say kind of easy, but it's much easier than the first 9 games where people like Damashek predicted they'd go 2-7, right? So
there's lots of Broncos on the schedule.
That's right. I didn't want to say it. I don't like offending any particular one team, but yes, lots of Broncos on the schedule. Let's talk about college now. What do you think of my idea, Jeff? Because the committee is going to screw over TCU or USC, regardless of if they win or not, and put Ohio State or Alabama in there. Why not just let Ohio State play Alabama this week? Just say, hey, you guys must play each other, and then we're going to figure out the screw job we have to put forth come Sunday.
What do you almost think? like Damage's idea of a loser bowl, just like the loser bowl of college football.
Yeah, except they're going to get the number 4. They're almost definitely going to get the number 4. Well, here's the
thing. If you're USC and TCU, you actually get no benefit from playing this weekend. It would be better if your game got forfeited and you'd be in the playoff. Because if you lose this game, and I can argue that that's what the, you know, the system is. Other teams have had to do this as well, not just you know USC and TCU. But yes, they're trying to find a way to put Ohio State, Alabama. And look, TCU is a under field goal favorite. I think USC is up to 3 now. Like, it's very possible both those teams lose, and we get an Ohio State team that isn't as good as they've been in the past. Alabama team that's not as good as they've been in the past, and you have kind of basically two rematches. Right, you're going to end up having Georgia, Alabama. You're going to end up having Michigan, Ohio State playing each other again. And I don't know. That's not good for college football. I'm fine with crowning the best team to win. Like, I have no problem Georgia wins again. I'm not one of these people that's like, someone else should win. They're the best team. They should win. But to have, again, a USC team that's 12-1, a TCU team that's 13-0 right now, right? No, they're 12-0. USC is 11-1. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a West Coast, you got a Texas, you got a Georgia, you got a Michigan. Like, that feels like college football, right? And to have those teams out of it, and they might lose. And then you end up having two Midwest teams, two South teams, kind of takes the fun out of you know, the national aspect of college football.
So I picked Utah to win the Pac-12 before the year started at +250. They obviously won the first game against USC. It was a great one, 43-42. Both teams had over 500 yards of offense. I'm taking Utah again, plus the points. If I can get three, pretty great. They averaged almost 40 points a year anyway, that Utah has, and number one scoring defense somehow. But it'll probably be at 30, you know, in the high 30s. I'm going to say Utah last, and I think that takes USC out of it. What are you saying? Utah or USC?
Well, so here's the way I look at this USC team. So they played 12 games this year. They played 4 against ranked opponents. They're +11 in turnover margin against ranked opponents. It's unexplainable. Yeah. They beat Oregon State on the road and UCLA on the road. They each forced 4 turnovers in each game and won those by 3 points each. They've played 12 games and have given up one whole fumble the entire season. Their defense is 107th in points per drive. Their special teams efficiency is 116th in the country.
Golly, Jeff, I want to bet on USC, but I mean,
but they have Caleb Williams, and he erases it all. And he makes all the plays. He does not throw interceptable passes. Like that turnover margin number is not because they got lucky in the passing game. Caleb Williams doesn't throw passes that are interceptable very often. Like, he does not make mistakes. And he erases all the issues they have on this team because his ability to score each and every drive to make the special plays is the difference in this game. You know, Utah's best player in this game might be their tight end. They won the first game that way. It feels hard to win the next game that way, right? With a tight end again. And so the ability for USC to create explosive plays on offense and their ability to turn the ball over. I'm tired of saying regression's coming. I keep saying that each week and it never happens. So at this point, the best bet is Utah +3, I think, if you're just asking me my wagering angle on this. Mm-hmm. But I think USC wins this game. I don't know how you bet against them right now.
Really? Okay. Wow. That puts us, you backed us into a corner here with only a 2.5-3 point margin. What's interesting is Tavian Thomas declared for the pros, running back, right? To get 7 touchdowns for Utah and is not going to play in this. And I know. Are we going to see a lot of this?
Yeah. So, okay. So he's a specifically interesting case. He had a great year last year, right? He was like the bell cow of that rushing attack they had. He had a weird offseason where I believe he had a family member pass away. He gained a bunch of weight. He wasn't in shape as much. And they were kind of talking about whether or not like he was kind of fully committed. He got benched at points this season, didn't play other halves this season. Like, there was a little bit of off the field concern about him. Then he came back against Stanford, I believe it was, and rushed for a bazillion yards 2 weeks ago and then didn't play against Colorado and was hurt and decided. So I'm not sure that matters so much because they've had other players have to get, you know, Bernard has 184 rushes. Glover has 78 rushes. Jaquindon Jackson is 32, a former quarterback who's playing running back now. He's averaging 6.5 yards a carry is Jackson. So they're going to be okay without him in the game. Obviously, him playing would be great. But they've managed to win a lot of games here without Thomas being the focal point of their offense.
Okay. All right. So USC wins. You have to include them in the top 4, right?
Yeah, they're USC. Yes.
Okay. If they lose, they're out.
Yes.
They're out. 12, they should be
12-2 with two losses to the same team, they're out. Well, they can't wait to put in Ohio State. Like, you just can't.
I know.
All right, but to be fair though, if this was the SEC and Alabama and Auburn were undefeated up until the Iron Bowl, and it, wouldn't it be the same scenario for Michigan and Ohio State that it is would be in a hypothetical for Auburn and Alabama? Like, they would be I don't understand why. I think Ohio State should be in.
Oh, look. If Ohio State's 11-1 and USC is 12-2, it'll be 11-2. It'll be 11-2 USC and 11-1 Ohio State. I understand Ohio State getting in over USC, but the problem I think that people have is Ohio State didn't play that final game, right? Mm-hmm. And USC did. And Ohio State lost the opportunity because they didn't beat the one team they had to beat. And because of that, they're in now over USC. If Ohio State had to play Michigan again this weekend, or was Purdue or anyone else, they have the possibility of losing as well. Do you punish
USC? That's why you play them against Alabama. That's why my idea. That's
I'm with you. So, like, do you punish USC for earning the right to play in their conference title game, but not allowing them to go to the playoff, or TCU in the same manner? Now, the argument to keep TCU, and I think, is much greater. They'll have one loss, right? Yeah, and they've beaten so many ranked opponents this season. If they're 12-1, you can't put Ohio State in over TCU, in my opinion.
They will. They will.
Really? You think so? Sure.
I do. That's a 12-team playoff, man.
The 12-team will be here soon.
No, I know. And it's funny you bring that up, because let's take Michigan for an example. They don't need to play this game, right? They're in no matter what. Yes. Why don't they pull a Tavian Thomas? Why don't they sit everybody?
There's a thought.
They're not going for a bye at this point. In the 12-team scenario, I could see why you wouldn't sit everybody. But why not sit everybody against Purdue?
I mean, you could also make the case for Georgia to do the same thing, as they're no matter what as well.
But what
are you resting them for? You're not playing another game for another month. Like, I understand if you're playing next week, you want to rest some guys, and if you lose, you lose. But you're not playing for another month, so I understand. You know, the 12-team format's interesting, guys. If you're a team like TCU or USC, you're probably not winning the championship this year. Like, do we agree on that? Like, Georgia's like, you're not good enough right now to win. Probably, maybe in a couple years, but you're not. Would you rather have a bye or a home playoff game?
So you're saying would you rather be the four seed or a bye or be the five seed
and have a home playoff game?
Yeah, but you would get both if you were a four seed. You get a bye and then a home game.
No, neutral site.
Oh, I see. Okay, I see. I didn't even know that.
The fan in me says, give me that five seed and let's see this thing on campus. Like, that would be live.
Yeah, way you set it up, if you don't have a chance to win the title, the answer is yes, a five seed, right?
Yeah, I think that's why Notre Dame loves the spot they're in, because they're never going to have a bye, so they're always going to have a home playoff game in the playoffs every time they're in. Now, they're not in this year, obviously, but like that's kind of fun. Like a home playoff game in some of these cold weather.
Sure.
Like, you went to Eugene. Imagine it a month later hosting a playoff game. It'd be incredible.
Right. No, absolutely. We're going to talk about that Eugene visit in a second. This Michigan, while I have it, they have odds on there. I want you to guess the line here. Michigan against any opponent they would play the rest of the way. Michigan against USC. Martin, what do you think the line would be?
I think Michigan by 3-4.
I think they're favored by like 9 in that game, right?
12.5.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy to me.
12.5. Michigan, Georgia, which is what everyone really kind of wants to see, right? If it plays out.
I guess about 8.
I have Georgia by a touchdown.
It's 5.5.
Wow.
So that means Georgia USC would be what, 15?
Yeah, I saw like 16. I saw 16 or 16-ish on the first when I first saw the lines come out. Georgia, then, think about Georgia. Like, when they want to play their best, no one's beating them.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Michigan.
No, it's true. I know. We're just spinning our wheels here. All right, let's get to TCU, Kansas State real quick. TCU also 2.5.
Yeah.
They won 38-28. They were actually losing 28-17 in that game and came back. But for me, it comes down to this. Adrian Martinez is not winning the Big 12 championship game. I'm sorry. 37-31. TCU wins, and they don't have to worry about anything the rest of the way.
It feels like, you know, TCU, this is like their season, right? The way they play this year, they've had multitude of ways they've won games, whether it was the first Kansas State game, a big comeback, whether it was that great execution of that hurry up field goal to beat Baylor. They just kind of have everything going in their direction. And it does feel like in this spot, they're going to win and cover this game. They're well coached. They kind of have a combination of two good things happening, right? So the Gary Patterson years, they're a heavy defensive team. So you lose the head coach, who's the defensive guy, but your guys are still there to play good defense.
Yeah.
And you're bringing the offensive side of it with Sonny Dykes. You marry the two together. You have this team this year that's much better on defense than any Sonny Dykes team will ever be, in my opinion. And you have the great offense with the offensive mind, and you have this TCU team. So I think TCU does win this game. It's in Dallas. Like, it's basically a home game for them. Right. It's going to happen.
Let me ask you, if Caleb Williams throws four picks Friday night, who gets the Heisman? Does Caleb Williams. Duggan get it? He still gets it. Yeah, he's such a big favorite now.
I bet a bunch of voters already voted already.
Oh, like really?
They shouldn't have, but I'm sure they did.
That's wild.
Yeah, not supposed to. Wow, he really just came. No, I don't say out of nowhere.
Vote whenever you can vote whenever you want. It opens up on Sunday, but you shouldn't. I agree with you.
Well, why would you? Why, you know, what?
Lazy? I don't know.
I'm busy that week. I don't know. I might forget, like, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's weird. All right. So, yeah, I say TCU wins. I see USC loses. And then we get Ohio State fourth. Hey, Eddie Spaghetti bet Ohio State. Now, when they had lost to Michigan, they were 50-1 odds to win the whole thing. Now they're plus 750. That's Spaghetti. Spaghetti, tell everybody why that's your best bet. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to. You're thinking USC loses, Spaghetti, and that's where Ohio State goes?
Yeah, I think TCU wins. I think Quinn Johnson coming back is great for them. And I think USC, like Jeff talked a lot about it. I did see them in person, you know, versus Notre Dame last week. And the reason they won that game was not because of Caleb Williams purely. It was because of Austin Jones had a buck 54 on the ground. He dominated the Notre Dame's defensive line. So I just think that Utah is just the more complete team. They'll stop that when he has one of the most underrated coaches in college football. And just USC's, like, their victories, like Jeff said, they beat Oregon State by three, UCLA by three, they beat a four loss Notre Dame team. It's like, at least Utah, they went to Gainesville, they played Florida, at least they played Oregon, like they played the tougher team. So I don't really buy USC as this great team, and I think they are going to go down. And then I think that means that a four seed will be Ohio State. And then I think Ohio State, at times, C.J. Stroud could be the best quarterback in the nation, and they have a great receiving core. And I think that, you know, Georgia hasn't slipped up yet, but they could be, you know, the next or the first four seed since the inaugural year of the playoff to win the entire thing.
I'm thinking, I wish I wasn't so angry at Ohio State. Sorry, Martin, I did pick them to beat Michigan, and I was so down on them. I wish I would have seen 50-1 odds and thought it through and be like, oh, yeah, let's put a few bucks on Ohio State. They're going to be, they potentially be there when it all matters. Yeah. It's not fair really to Georgia though. Is it, Jeff? Like, if Ohio State gets in there, just by the odds I just read you, Ohio State would be a 7-point dog to Georgia versus a USC who we just figured out would be like a 15-point dog, right?
No, it's certainly not, but Georgia will smoke Ohio State too. So it doesn't matter. Like, if Michigan did that, guess what Georgia's going to do? Sorry. Like, when Georgia beat Oregon week one, their coach Kirby Smart said, yeah, we just have better players than they do. Yeah, you have better players than everyone does. Like, that's why you're Georgia. It's why you're number one in the country right now. You have better players across the board than the other teams do, and that matters a lot in these big games.
Yeah.
I was speaking of having better players, apparently Blake Corum has zero shot to win the Heisman after hurting his knee and being, like, basically the best player on the undefeated team. How do you think Michigan's chances are going forward without him? Like, I know you said that the next meaningful, they obviously got to beat Purdue or play Purdue, but the next meaningful game will be in a month. But if he can't go with Donovan Edwards and the rest of the running game, what do you think that would be like?
I mean, they played pretty well against Ohio State, right? Without him in there. And part of that was Ohio State kind of selling out to stop the run, didn't have any safeties, and boom, Edwards popped free those last two runs. I think Michigan, by the way, wins and covers against Purdue. I don't think that game is it has shades of last year's Iowa game. Maybe Purdue can score a little bit more than Iowa can. But they should be fine without him. I mean, I think their offensive line is one of the better units again in the country this season, especially if they have a month to prepare a game plan for TCU, let's say, or USC. They'll be fine. Now, against Georgia, you'd like to have, you know, all your guys healthy and available to play in that type of game. Just every weapon possible would be very important. But I don't think they're going to have a problem this weekend without him, and a problem against the first-round opponent if they are the two seed.
Yeah. I hate to bring this up, but, you know, and there are losses that sting. Obviously, when you played, it's going to hurt more if you played on a team that blew a big lead. But boy, oh boy, Oregon State coming back and beating Oregon in that fashion has to be the most debilitating of all losses, right?
He only completed like six passes out of Oregon State quarterback.
He completed one in the comeback.
It was bad, guys. Yeah, we got punked at the last scrimmage in that fourth quarter. And what's so interesting is we were good against the run all season. Like, I don't know what happened. I don't know why we just fell asleep in the fourth quarter. I mean, there were times when we didn't touch the running back till 7-8 yards down the field. It's mind blowing to see that happening. You know, there were some mistakes on offense, but I can't really fault an offense that had 34 points and 500 yards against the second best defense in our conference. Like, that's Oregon State allowed 17 points to USC. We had 34. Right. Like, I'm fine with their offense, and it becomes, you know, there's more on the offense and your defense can't do anything. Our punt team was stinky. Our kickoff return team had some mistakes. If you told me we went 9-3 with Dan Lanning in his first year, I'd be ecstatic. And I'm still very excited for the future of our program. But the two losses to our two rivals sting a lot. And you kind of just have to eat that for the rest of the season until you play Washington and Oregon State again. But he's on the recruiting trail today, getting our five-star quarterback, making him happy, get him in town in January, and you know, closing some recruits out, some transfers, a new offensive coordinator. I feel good about where we're at, but that was a bad way to lose a football game.
Bo Nix, you say, may come back. He's leaning towards coming back, right?
I think he is. Yeah. He'll be like 25 next year. Can you imagine being like 24 years old? I think it's going to be 24. 24. He's married in Eugene. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? What do you do with yourself? Like, what are you doing?
I was married in Eugene a couple of weeks ago. We took my son, my oldest, on a college recruiting tour. I don't know what it was, but we went to see the Utah game. That place was really loud, really, really loud. Fun. That was a fun win. A minor upset because they didn't know if Nix was starting. So they became an underdog before kickoff. And then he jumps in there. But then I told you the next day I went to a bar and that promised to have all the games, all the Sunday games. And it ended up being a Bills bar, and they somehow had Sunday ticket. I'm like, oh God. And so now I'm just watching on my phone all day because it was too late to reorganize and try to figure out what was the name of the bar.
The cooler.
And you have a story from the cooler, right?
Yeah. Oh man. That's right by the stadium, right? Still there. Yep. And it moved. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So my 21st birthday was at the cooler, and it was, I had never thrown up in my life drinking, and I could drink a lot in college. And my offensive line mates were going to make sure I threw up that night, and I drank a lot at the cooler. It was middle of July, July 11th. We're at the cooler, and they just kept feeding me drinks. Like, not the amount of drinks I had. I think I told you, Sal, they were just, I had a Long Island iced tea, and they were, as people left their seats around the bar, they picked up the drinks and poured them in my Long Island iced tea. They made me drink some gross stuff. Like, there was a cement mixer. There was a drink that it was tequila, Tabasco, and mayonnaise. Like, I just, it's just so gross. Oh, no. And I threw up, of course, but I don't know, 21 years old. Like, what do you do? Like, I rallied and was out on the lake the next morning. I couldn't do that now. But the cooler, man, brings like a lot of memories.
Your family's, man, like, you're coming home during the summers from now on. What is this nonsense? You're staying in the middle of July drinking your face off. I mean, you were a star lineman at that point, right?
I guess I was starting. I don't know if I was a star. I did have some billboards though at Oregon. So I'll take, I had two billboards. I had one outside the airport one year. So the first face you saw when you came into Eugene was Jeff Schwartz and Max Unger. So that's always a fun memory. Did you like it though? It's nice up there, right?
We loved it. And I worry that it's too big. My son, who, the only guidance he gave us is like, I want to go to a place where there's a good football team. And I said, all right, good. And then we went, and it was just so massive. That crowd is so great. And the energy is so
much.
I wonder if it scared him, but more than that, you bring up a good point with the cold weather. I went from cold weather to a cold weather school. So did Martin. It's different from a SoCal boy,
it's
right?
Hard. Going out there. It's hard. The hardest part is not really the cold. It's the no sun. Like, you just don't see the sun for months at a time in Eugene. Right. Like, that was, so my first winter there, we had an abnormally warm winter in Eugene. So I was fine. The next winter, I had to call my parents. I was like, I need to come home and see the sun. Like, it's just, you just don't see the sun. It's just gray, from November till March, but then from March until November, it's awesome. It's like you're just outside the entire time. You're flowing the river. You're drinking. You're having a good time. You're going to sporting events. That track stadium, which I'm sure you saw, is incredible. Yeah, like there's a lot of things to do. If you're a student there, you go to Portland's 2 hours away. So it's just getting through those winter months is kind of a stinker.
Yeah.
See, well, I moved to Michigan in sophomore year of high school. So I came from warm weather. I just had like a smooth 2 day or 2 year rather bump before going to college. The thing that was the worst, it's not seeing the sun.
Yeah.
It never shines. And if it's gray from November to St. Patrick's Day. And that's just that is truly the worst part. That's the thing that your son's gonna have to deal with the best. Cause out here it never stops shining.
Correct.
Well, if you're drinking, you'll see a lot of stars if you drink Long Island iced teas just mixed with everyone's beer and Tabasco sauce and everything. That and mayonnaise. That's what I'm doing.
The cooler, man. They can't be out of all the places to go, where are you staying?
You know, it was a walk from the hotel, the Even Hotel, I think. Even.
That's a new hotel. When I was in school, there were like three hotels in the entire city. Well, I think they've changed. I think they've upgraded a few hotels.
There's more now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
there you go. I hope he goes there. I think it's good. Only because I don't want to visit any more schools. I think that's
how many how many does Autzen Stadium sit? How many people were there?
If it's capacity, it's like 59, but that's like 102% capacity. Gosh. I think it seats like 57, but I don't know. I guess that's students probably. They just jam all the students in and create a bigger crowd.
Yeah, there was no room for anything. It's crazy.
Loud. Like it's really loud.
And you don't really get seats, right? Like we got to our seats a few minutes late.
There's benches,
you can't get anyone to move down. It's like, all right, why do we have to lap it here with my 9-year-old? Like, you're clearly two guys taking up four seats. Can you move? But anyway, people were nice though in general. I will say that. Jeff Schwartz, what do you want to plug? I mean, Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. That's obvious by this podcast. What else you got?
Well, that's really what I have. Just go to my Twitter. By the way, are you looking forward to Oregon being in the Kimmel Bowl? I kind of hope this happens now.
I was going to ask you, do you? I mean, don't they have to be the fifth? Last year was the fifth place Pac-12 team against the first place Mountain West.
I don't think there's any affiliations anymore about rankings. I think it's basically like kind of can choose, like choose your own adventure. So I think if Utah wins, that knocks everyone down a bowl, right? So Utah then goes to the Rose Bowl. USC goes to the Alamo Bowl. And then it kind of goes down from there. And then Washington probably gets chosen by the Holiday Bowl. Like there's an order which the bowls choose. And Oregon might be down there, the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, which is like, I love it. It's early, right? It's like December 18th. It's super early in the process.
And it's a day game. And they got a good, like they have a reputable announce crew for it this year. Like this is, this could be interesting.
Upgrade. Is it Mountain West still?
It's Mountain West. So they're, I think Boise is expected. Everything I read it says
Mountain
Boise
West 1? You get Mountain West 1 or Mountain West 2? It's a big difference.
I think the one, because it was Utah State last year, and they were the one. Yeah, I don't know, unless they changed it, like you said. I'm not sure.
I'm about to fly to LA for the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl.
To see
the Oregon Ducks play.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Kimmel is a bowl. It's incredible. It's so much. It's really so funny.
She needed to be in that Rose Bowl for crying out loud. But we'll have a good time.
I will be in town. Will I be in town for this game? I'm going to be in town 17th? In LA. I will. I got a bat mitzvah to go to at 4:30 on the 17th.
So really?
I can catch the first half of Oregon's in town.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. Okay, let's do that. And then I'll go with you to the bat mitzvah.
That'll
be your plus one. That'll be perfect. Fun.
Yes.
Jeff, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Have a good one.
There you go, Martin. I feel smarter about this college slate.
I mean, I just know the Jeff. I mean, if you're going to pick a Jeff to coach your team, would pick the Jeff that had the podcast that he's smarter than you. That would be my choice.
If there's an offensive lineman, Jeff out there. Yeah. He needs to rub elbows with some of the higher ups there in these organizations. Then he can get a job. It's not that hard. All right. Pup of the week, Martin, let's do it. I'll tell you what, I'm taking the Texans. I know they're the worst team. I think they step it up this week. I don't expect Deshaun Watson. I mean, he hasn't played football in 2 years. So they're definitely going to get off to a slow start. I would feel, I say Texans in the first half, but I think they win the game 23-21. They're pitiful. They're going to win. One of those teams that has this game circled on their calendar, much like the Bills did with the Pats did with the Bills and the Chiefs did with the Bengals. 23-21 Texans. What's your pup of the week?
I love that, especially I know this. I don't know if they went out right, but definitely the seven. Like, you can't laying seven on the or with Deshaun Watson sounds like fool's gold, like fool's errand at this point in time.
Yeah.
I'm taking King Henry and the Tennessee Titans to run through the Eagles, give them the second loss of the year. Titans go to 8-5 and, you know, essentially run away with the AFC South. And like they do every other year when nobody expected, you know, I'm Tennessee here against the Eagles. I'll give a final score like you like to do, 24-17.
All right. And Dave Damashek said the Dolphins, although Spaghetti, you said there was some, you guys who tried to, you convinced them to take the Dolphins, well, right? On minus three.
Yeah. The crux of the podcast, the large part was, can Jimmy G win Super Bowl LVII? And that was like a big talking point. And myself and Hench both said that, like, hey, the Dolphins getting 4 points. I know it's on the road, but their offense is scoring a crazy amount. And, you know, the 49ers defense, I mean, offense rather only, you know, they only scored 13 points versus the Saints last week. So I thought, yeah, look, we all said that. So, and Dave stuck with the 49ers. So to hear the switch back less than 24 hours is something else.
All right. Well, he will have the 49ers on the graphic. So there'll be all different kinds of things going on with Check. I don't think he's done the inconsistency. All right. I got a lot of money on Germany, so I should check that game out now. World Cup talk. Martin, did we win Saturday? It'd be fun to get to the great eight. We could say we're one of the eight best teams in the world.
Yeah, it'd be fun. In the words of Dave Damashek, it'd be a fun bet, but I don't
it's
think
it's a fun bet.
Yeah, it's not happening. It's not happening.
No, too many penis injuries on the U.S. men's squad. There you go. All right. ExtraPoints.com/arcade. Play the prop quiz. Play the pick'em contest. $100 gold caps. I'll have a big announcement for all of us next week.
Ooh.
Fingers crossed. It's going to be fun. I'm a tease. That's what they call a tease, Martin. And a reminder to everyone out there, you may feel like underdogs, but please remember, you're all my favorites.